Hello again, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, January the 5th. And hooray, our telephones are working again. The new session of the 110th Congress is underway with Democrats in control for the first time in more than a dozen years. And for the first time in history, with a woman serving as Speaker of the House. Nancy Pelosi noted that in her opening statements yesterday. Today we make history, she said. Today we change the direction of our country. Both Democrats and Republicans alike pledged cooperation to try to get the 110th Congress off to a productive start. We'll wonder this hour how long that might last, and we'll talk about the items on the Democrats' 100-hour agenda. The House has already cleared the way for tougher ethics rules to try to rid Congress of the culture of corruption label. The rules would ban gifts from lobbyists and ban travel funded by special interest groups, among other things. We'll talk about that and other items on the Democrats' agenda this hour, including a hike in the federal minimum wage, the pay-as-you-go budget rules, adopting recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, promoting embryonic stem cell research, and negotiating lower Medicare prescription drug prices. And we'll also talk about the Iraq War and the funding of the Iraq War. What will a democratically controlled Congress be able to do and actually be willing to do regarding the war in Iraq? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send your question or comment about the issue before Congress that you want to talk about to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest this hour is David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He specializes in Congress and the presidency. And Professor Cannon joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
The President and Speaker Pelosi had a conference call yesterday and exchanged niceties, saying that they were looking forward to working together and, you know, and all that bipartisan kumbaya stuff. How long do you think this is going to continue?
Well, it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that some of the things they're doing right now will pass pretty easily and probably be signed by the President. Certainly, the minimum wage increase is long overdue. Having the new lobbying laws imposed is something that they tried to get done last year but couldn't accomplish. So I think that also will be signed by the President if they're going to put that forward. The PAYGO provisions, again, is something that Democrats have been pushing for some time. The President may not be as enthusiastic about supporting that, but probably will, given the budget deficits that we face right now. So a lot of the things that they're being talking about right now for the next 100 hours, I think will accomplish a fair amount. The tougher issues, though, that remain on the table that aren't in the 100-day agenda, 100-hour agenda, are the war in Iraq, Social Security reform, immigration reform, some of the really big issues that you can't tackle in a matter of hours, but it's going to take weeks and months, and that's where the real test will come as to whether or not we'll have bipartisanship.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that. I did read that Republicans, though, are already grousing that they had nothing to do with this opening agenda.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So the big controversy in these first couple days is the fact that the Democratic leadership decided to basically shut out the Republicans, much in the same way that they'd been shut out for the last 12 years or so, and much of the important legislation was passed in the House. The previous speaker, Dennis Hastert, had a rule that came to be known as the Hastert rule, that if a majority of his own caucus didn't approve of something, he wouldn't allow it to come forward for a vote. And Pelosi seems to be endorsing that principle, in at least for this first 100-hour legislation, that she didn't want to allow Republicans to offer their alternative to some of the Democratic agenda, and so she's basically not allowing amendments to any of these proposals, and also bringing these up without a full committee kind of hearing and discussion. So Republicans are pretty upset about that, saying the Democrats were backpedaling on a promise that they had made during the campaign to open up the process and to not engage in this more partisan kind of behavior. Mm. Now, in their defense, Pelosi's defense, what she says is, well, a lot of the stuff we already have talked about, this has been on the agenda for some time, we don't need another full round of committee hearings. We want to, you know, get this stuff done right away. And if we did allow Republicans to offer alternatives, it would just slow down the process. We want to enact this agenda as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And so there is more to this than just sort of a PR stunt cramming all this stuff in a 100-hour agenda?
Well, there definitely is a PR element to it. And my own sort of personal preference would be to sort of slow this down a little bit and try to have the best legislation possible rather than what's doable. Because the danger in trying to move so quickly and try to get everything done in the 100 legislative hours is that you are forced to go with what is easily agreed upon. And so you have to have somewhat watered-down proposals as opposed to things that may be better legislation if you took the time to hammer out an agreement on a better piece of legislation that might take more time. Now, of course, the danger, if you go that route, is it might all unravel. And ethics reform is a great example of that, in fact, which was, you know, was passed yesterday. The true reformers, the people who are arguing for stronger lobbying reform, say that what was passed yesterday really isn't strong enough. It's a step in the right direction, but it really doesn't accomplish everything that we need to. So that's an example of something that was passed that was doable, but it probably wasn't the best legislation that could have been passed. But if you would have pushed for stronger legislation, it's possible that you couldn't get the votes to pass it. Like John Dingell, for example, the powerful committee chair from Michigan on the Democratic side, has expressed his lack of support, his opposition to the stronger reforms that would have an outside office to monitor the ethics laws. He says he's opposed to that. And so if Pelosi tried to push for that, it's possible she wouldn't have the votes to get that done. So she's kind of going the easy route right now, trying to get things passed that she has the votes for.
So is he the one vote on this vote of 430-1 for the stricter ethics rules?
No, actually not. No, that was a member of Congress from Indiana who was the one vote against. But no, Dingell supported this more watered-down version.
Yeah. that guy's got some splaining to do. Anyway, David Cannon, our guest, professor of political science at UW-Madison. He specializes in Congress and the presidency. He's talking with us about the Democrats' 100-hour agenda currently underway in Washington, D.C. The Democrats now in control of Congress. We'll talk about this short-term agenda and some on the long-term agenda as well. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 19 minutes past 7 o'clock. We're talking about Congress, which is underway. The 110th Congress got down to business yesterday, and we're talking about the 100-hour agenda that Democrats are trying to push through with David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, and with you if you want to talk about an issue before Congress, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Well, let's go to the phones, Professor Cannon, and take our first caller, Bill in Deerfield. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm all for the 100-hour agenda as far as it goes, but no legislation really means anything with this president until they address the issue of the signing statements. Bush thinks that he's the unitary executive slash emperor and can do whatever he feels, regardless of the legislative branch. And you saw just the other day where it's reported that even though Congress passed a law saying you can't open mail unless it's an extreme emergency and you have a FISA court overlooking it, President Bush had a signing statement saying, well, fine, I signed that, but now I'm signing the signing statement saying I can open mail and I don't need the FISA court. So going back to your last hour, when I would say you have a stamp with the Fourth Amendment, that's my stamp.
I want to talk a little bit about signing statements. I know that we're looking at doing a program on this on Monday, that the president in a signing statement said he could, in an emergency, open mail.
Right. No, it's a huge issue, and Bill's, I think, right to point out the significance of this, and it really is pretty unprecedented, the extent to which President Bush has been using signing statements to express his opposition to laws that he just signed. And this is a disturbing trend. I agree that this is pushing too much power in the direction of the president. But having said that, I don't want to overstate how significant it is that, you know, if Congress passes an increase in the minimum wage and President Bush signs that, that's going to go into effect. It's not like President Bush can unilaterally, you know, stop the minimum wage from being increased. So that's not going to happen. It has more to do with interpretation of aspects of laws, and typically in the area of national security. I mean, President Bush has not used this, you know, across the board in all areas of all policy to try to undermine the law. And also, signing statements in terms of their legal status are very much in limbo right now, that, you know, the courts have not entirely ruled on the constitutionality of what the president is trying to do. So this is very much an area of institutional balance of power that's kind of in flux right now. But again, it's an important thing to be watching, and I am glad that it's getting more attention, because it's largely ignored for many years, and now people are starting to pay more attention to the significance of this.
Yeah, let's clip through the 100-hour agenda just to talk about these issues a little bit. We already mentioned that the House passed these new ethics rules, banning gifts from lobbyists and travel funded by special interests. What else was supposed to be in there to toughen things up, David Cannon, that wasn't in there?
Well, the main thing that wasn't in there that the reformers are arguing for is this independent office to oversee the implementation of ethics reforms. And they argue that as long as the ethics committee inside the House and Senate are overseeing the implementation of these rules, there won't be real enforcement. And I agree with those reformers. I think we do need to have the outside independent office to actually oversee the implementation of these rules. Another big loophole in the law that was passed yesterday was that lobbyists won't be able to give gifts and have meals for members of Congress unless it's part of a campaign event. As long as it's part of a campaign event, they can still you know, take a member of Congress out to a fancy dinner.
Yeah, what's the
point?
And
so that's a pretty big loophole.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about, what is this pay-as-you-go legislation that's going to be debated today?
That is significant, and I think that's a huge step towards really tackling our budget deficit problems. That was a rule that was in effect back in the 1990s when and was done away with about 8 or 10 years ago, I guess, that says that if you're going to either cut taxes or increase spending, you have to pay for that somewhere else in the budget by either increasing taxes or cutting other spending. It's a way of making sure that we're not adding to the budget deficits by either cutting taxes or increasing spending in some area. And so it's a way of imposing some fiscal restraint on the budget process. And I think it is a very important measure that hopefully will pass today.
And it says here that on Tuesday, lawmakers plan to vote on enacting the recommendations of the September 11th commission.
Right. Yeah, and that's an area, again, that Democrats have been pushing for some time, arguing that, you know, the real security of the country has been ignored, and that some of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission have not been implemented that should be. Most importantly, port security and cargo inspection, that, you know, they point out that, you know, these millions of containers come into the country every year, and only a very tiny fraction are ever inspected for hazardous kinds of weapons and so on. And that needs to be stepped up. Also, stronger oversight of the intelligence process in Congress. That is another thing the 9/11 Commission recommended that Congress really did not act on, was to have stronger oversight of the executive branch. And there are a couple other recommendations as well, but those are two of the most important ones that the Democrats will try to pass on Tuesday.
Wednesday, looks like we'll see a hike in the federal minimum wage.
Yeah, and that's almost certain to pass. And this is actually a good example of why Pelosi wanted to sort of keep the Republicans out of this at this point, because the Republicans want to tie the minimum wage increase to additional tax cuts for business. And that's something that Pelosi is concerned. If she allows that Republican alternative to be voted on, it might attract enough support from moderate conservative Democrats that could actually pass. And she thinks that that's a bad idea because it would, you know, add further to the budget deficits, and we really can't afford that right now. So she wants to keep this a clean bill with just the minimum wage increase, and that's it. And again, I think that is certainly the right of the majority party to have what's called a closed rule, where you don't allow amendments to be offered. And the minimum wage increase almost certainly will pass, again, without those additional tax cuts attached to that.
Well, here's one that President Bush isn't going to like, presumably, the expanding the federal funding for research into embryonic stem cell research.
Right. That's supposed to come on Thursday next week, and it's possible that this could bring the first presidential veto of the new Congress, something that President Bush has expressed strong opposition to in the past. And if this does pass on Thursday, that could draw the first presidential veto.
Mm-hmm. And is Congress in any shape to override this?
Probably not. Mm-hmm. Although it's possible that, you know, because especially Republicans looking forward to 2008 may remember some of the close elections from November in which stem cell research seemed to play a role in defeating some Republicans. So if there are enough moderate Republicans who are looking, you know, forward to the next election and realize this is an issue that's fairly popular with the public and has pretty strong public support, it's possible you'd get enough votes to override, but right now it looks like probably not.
And then finally on Friday, it says legislation to try to allow the federal government to negotiate lower prescription drug prices for Medicare.
Right. Now, this is an interesting one as well, because here you have a case where the Bush administration basically says they're not in favor of this. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services says that he's really not interested in trying to negotiate lower prices for Medicare prescription drugs, that he says the market is working fine, we'll let the insurers do this themselves, I don't want to intervene in the free market. So here you have a case where Congress is going to, you know, try to force the administration to do something they don't want to do, and it's not entirely clear how they can really force them to do that. And this is one of the bits of the details of this legislation that haven't been worked out yet, but I think it clearly will pass. The question is whether or not it will be effective to actually changing the ability of Medicare to negotiate lower prices.
Lots of callers, but they're taking Monday off. What happened to the 5-day work week?
Well, they're supposed to at least have some votes starting late Monday. But yeah, for this 100 hours, I guess they figured they needed to have one more extra day there.
We'll cut them some slack. Linda in Monroe, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor Cannon. Now, President Bush wants a war with the Arabs over the oil so he can give his rich corporate friends a tax break and golden parachutes. Now, at the same time, he's running the country broke. Now, he keeps borrowing from Social Security in countries like China and Japan, and he thinks that we're dumb enough not to know what's going on. Now, my question is, will the Democrats do something about this, or will the Republicans and the lobbyists stop them?
Do something about what, Linda?
The funding, how the war is funded.
And the budget deficits more generally.
Yeah, well,
I think certainly on the question of sort of fiscal restraint and budget deficits, the Democrats have made this a priority. And the one that's going to be really significant is the PAYGO provisions that we talked about already. Another much smaller issue that's on the table today as well is the earmark reform. You might have remember hearing about in the last couple of years the explosion in the amount of pork barrel spending that Republicans have been engaging in. And so Pelosi also is trying to make that more open and accountable to cut down on the amount of earmarks. Now, that's a relatively small drop in the bucket when it comes to overall spending, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, let me hold you there for now. We'll continue after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, talking with David Cannon, who is a UW-Madison professor of political science, about Congress. The Democrats have an ambitious plan for the first 100 hours of the 110th Congress. We're looking at the various legislation being considered, short-term and long-term. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio on this Friday, January the 5th. It's about 7:36. We're talking about Congress and what Congress is trying to accomplish in the next 100 hours with David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, who specializes in Congress and the presidency. The Democrats, now in control for the first time in about a dozen years, have a 100-hour agenda that we've talked some about, including hiking the minimum wage, expanding federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, pay-as-you-go legislation, budget legislation to be considered today, enacting the recommendations of the September 11th Commission, and legislation to allow the federal government to negotiate lower prescription drug prices for senior citizens in Medicare. Talked also about the new ethics rules that were passed yesterday. weaker than what some wanted. And we will talk a little bit more about longer-term issues facing Congress with David Cannon. And with you, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org, talk at WPR.org. Professor Cannon, President Bush next week, I've heard possibly Wednesday, maybe Thursday, is going to give his new strategy for Iraq speech. And there's talk about what in the world Congress is going to do if he says, let's surge the troops, with some in Congress and many in the American public not happy with the idea of increasing troops in Iraq when they want to withdraw troops. What do you expect Congress will do with this information?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one for the Democratic leadership. And already you can see some split within the party in terms of what the best way to approach this would be. Some Democratic leaders have said, well, we're not thrilled about this, but you know, we'll go along with the president for maybe 3 to 6 months if he thinks this is going to help. Others have come out very strongly opposed to the idea that it really is not going to put us in the in a more positive direction in Iraq, and it's just going to make the problem worse. And so the bottom line question, though, is, you know, can Congress really do anything to stop the president if they are opposed to this? And the reality is there really isn't a whole lot they can do other than literally cut off funds for this. Mm-hmm. But that puts the Democratic leaders and Democrats in the Congress more generally in a tough spot, because they don't want to be seen as, you know, harming the troops in any way. And if you're cutting funding for them when they're already there, I mean, that obviously puts the military in a very difficult position. And what are they going to do? You know, make it so they, you know, can't have food to eat or enough, you know, mm-hmm. you know, kind of defensive kind of you know, things to protect them while they're there. So the Congress doesn't want to be in that position. So the president really ultimately will call the shots on this. I think Congress can express its disapproval, and it may very well do that if the president is talking about a large troop increase. You may see a vote, a resolution in opposition to that, but it's not really clear that Congress could do much to stop the president if he really wants to increase the troops.
Let's go to Bernie in Whitewater. Hi, Bernie, you're on the air.
Good morning. I think there are a number of big-ticket items that, unfortunately, the leadership of both major parties are in complete agreement on, and hence the Democrats in Congress will not do what they could to bring these issues to the foreground and try to make a case to the American people, regardless of whether they could get them passed through President Bush, which would not happen. And to talk about the Iraq funding, for example, I always hear that argument about how cutting the funding would put the troops at risk. But to me, that makes absolutely no sense, because if the funding were cut, the troops would be brought home and they would be safe. And when you add it up, we were spending over $600 billion a year on so-called defense, which is largely offense. And Harry Reid, the Democratic leader, wants to increase the defense budget even further. So basically, I see bipartisan agreement on bad policies. I see the old Congress is completely obscene and the new one is awful. And, you know, any number of issues, national health, closing the borders, ending the drug war, on, tax relief for the American people. We'll never get tax relief if we're spending $100 to $200 billion a year in Iraq. It'll never happen. And I think the Democratic leadership, unfortunately, is very disappointing and beholden to the same corporate paymasters that the Republicans are.
Professor Cannon.
Well, that's, yeah, a very strong indictment of the two-party system there. And I think that there are some areas where the list that he just mentioned where the Democrats will, in fact, push in a direction that the Republicans weren't willing to in the past. And the two of the lists that he mentioned that I think you probably are most likely to see some movement would be in the area of immigration reform, which was bottled up last year because of the House of Representatives, you know, being opposed mm-hmm. to what the Senate and the President basically had agreed upon. I think there you will see some real movement. And second, also on tax reform, Pelosi already has indicated that she would be in favor of having a return to some of the 1990 levels of taxation for the for wealthy people, which would allow for either a serious addressing of the budget deficit problem, or perhaps some middle-class tax cuts. And so I think there you probably will see some movement as well. Now, that, again, could be subject to a presidential veto.
Bernie, thanks for the call. Dennis in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Professor, do you think our elected representatives think that the public is enamored with their, I equate it to a 100-day or a, 10-hour Macy's Day sale sort of something.
Right.
I mean, with these little platitudes in terms of look at everything we're doing, and don't they see the irony of the fact that they have to pass laws that say they should act responsibly?
The ethics reform.
Yeah, that and the PAYGO, the other thing you're referring to, I suppose. I would say this is somewhere between a 10-hour Macy's sale and something really serious. I mean, it's more than just PR. I mean, I think they are, in the next 100 hours, going to pass some really significant pieces of legislation that will move policy in a direction that's different than it had been going in the last 10 to 12 years. And so I think it is more than just window dressing. But I do share some of your reservations, and I expressed at the top of the hour that my preference would be for a somewhat more deliberative process where you do consider a more full range of alternatives rather than just what's doable right now at this moment. And so I think there's some flaws in trying to move so quickly in the first 100 hours, but I think there will be some real gains to come from this flurry of legislative activity.
Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Terry in Little Chute. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to just mention one quick story that I heard that this kind of makes a point about the rest of Congress. Yesterday, John Edwards stepped down from his commission or organization that he started about the, I can't think of the exact title, but it's about ending poverty in America. And when he stepped down, his statement was, that he thought it was in good hands and the leadership was taken care of because they've already made some progress, and the progress that he referred to was, he said, in the last 2 years, we've already had a couple of meetings about this issue, and I thought, okay, that's what's considered progress. Judge us not by any results; judge us by our intentions. The thing that I think is, I think you can probably point to Congress on both sides of the aisle and say, that's pretty much all they expect. But the thing that was interesting was the PAYGO system that you mentioned earlier. That's what really caught my attention here. And what I was wondering about is if with tax cuts, if you make a tax cut, and it's been proven, Kennedy proved it, Reagan proved it, Bush has proven it over the last few years, that when you make a tax cut, you increase the revenue flow into the Treasury. And people are willing to invest more. They're willing, they hire more people. Those people get jobs. They pay taxes, and it all just comes home. I mean, it all comes back, often many fold. But the thing is that if you're going to say PAYGO, that it has to be, if there's a tax cut somewhere, then it's got to be quote unquote paid for somewhere else. Well, I mean, they more than pay for themselves as it is.
Yeah,
but
I need to hold you there, Terry, because we're at a weather break, and I need Professor Cannon to respond to that. So apparently Terry doesn't think the pay-as-you-go thing is worthwhile because he thinks tax cuts bring in revenue.
Well, yeah, actually, it'd be nice if that was true, but if you look at what happened in both the 1980s and the recent situation, we have had an explosion in our budget deficits we've had a huge increase in the amount of money that is going out of the system and not as much money coming into the system, and so we are running up big budget deficits right now. So it'd be nice if we could cut taxes further and further and have more money coming in, but the simple math doesn't work out in that way. And so the PAYGO provision does provide some restraint, and it's something that most fiscal conservatives, like the Concord Coalition, for example, strongly endorse this because it is a way to try to impose more restraint on the system.
Yeah, and you said President Bush isn't wild about this, but will likely go along with it?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that he sees this as something that will prevent further tax cutting, which he would favor. But I think he also recognizes that something needs to be done to get the budget deficits under control.
We're going to check the weather forecast and then two more questions about the issues before Congress for David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, talking with us about the new 110th Congress and its 100-hour agenda. Democrats in control for the first time in about a dozen years. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine talking about the new Congress, Democrats in control of Congress, and the 100-hour Democratic agenda currently underway. Zach in Green Bay is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about my dismay and anger over the far too compromising position of the Democrats when it comes to the issue of health care. Yesterday on NPR, they had a show on that, and the Republican made some outrageous comment about the Canadian system, whereby implying that you get better veterinary service than you do health care service in Canada. And that statement went completely unchallenged by either the host or the Democrat on that was in the discussion. And the Democrat said that single-payer health care is not even going to be anywhere on the agenda because it's politically an unreality. And basically what I think the Democrats are saying is, certainly the Republicans as well, is it's okay for untold thousands of middle-class Americans to rot economically because they have the audacity to get old and contract illnesses because they don't have the guts to challenge the lobbyists for the insurance and pharmaceutical industries.
I guess I would... I would disagree with whoever you were listening to that this is not going to be on the agenda at all. I think that I would agree that it's not likely to pass in the next couple of years. But I think the stage is being set now for another serious national discussion of comprehensive health care reform that you've seen over the last couple of years, you know, difficulties in the auto industry and some other, you know, major corporations that realize that they're at a huge competitive disadvantage right now internationally because we don't have comprehensive health care in this country and all other of our competitors do. And so I think you're seeing a bit of a change in the political dynamic here where there's more support now on the business side than there was back in, say, 1993. And so I think that the political forces are shifting a bit. And so I don't think this is going to happen in the next 2 years, but I think it's more likely now than any time that we've seen in the past, say, 12 years. So while this is a long-term thing, it's certainly not on the 100-hour agenda. This is definitely in the long-term agenda, and I think the Democratic Party, there are voices for comprehensive health care reform within the party. I think we'll hear those voices a little more loudly over the next couple of years.
Thanks, Zach, for the call. It says here that President Bush outlined his legislative priorities on the eve of the start of the 110th Congress, saying he wants to trim Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid and balance the federal budget in 5 years. Those don't seem to be the top priorities of the Democrats in Congress, trimming Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Right. No, that's one area where I think the president and Congress will have a tough time finding agreement because, I mean, there the president has pretty strongly indicated his preference for, you know, partially privatizing Social Security, for moving more and more of the activity in Medicare to private insurers rather than funding it through Medicare like the new prescription drug plan. And those are directions that are clearly not favored by the Democrats. And so those topics are the ones that I think are going to be the most difficult to address, in addition, of course, to Iraq.
Right. Jason in Madison is with us now. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Actually, I'm just calling. I'm wondering, do you think the new Congress will consider raising or lifting the current $90,000 cap on the Social Security payroll tax?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I think to look at areas where Democrats and President Bush could agree on entitlement reform, that would be one possible place of compromise. I think that you could see Democrats and President Bush agreeing to raise the cap. I mean, not to remove the cap entirely, but raise the cap maybe to, say, $110,000, $120,000, something like that, as a way of bringing in more revenue to the Social Security system. Also, increasing the retirement age is another possible area of kind of incremental change that you might find some bipartisan agreement. So while I think private accounts are off the table for the Democrats and any kind of, you know, massive cuts are off the table, these more incremental changes to bring in more revenue and to save money through, say, increasing the retirement age, I think there may be some possible area for compromise.
We are talking with David Cannon, a professor of political science at UW-Madison, about the new Congress, the first 100 hours of Congress, the 100-hour agenda underway right now and through next week, what Democrats want to do now that they are in control for the first time in about a dozen years. And we have an open line for you if you want to talk about the issues before Congress, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And our next caller is Glenn in Rhinelander. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been bothered ever since Bush and Cheney got into the office. The first thing they did was get all the oil people together, lock themselves in a meeting, have refused to tell anybody what went on. Gas prices went from $1.50 to $4 a gallon. And I was wondering if maybe the new Congress is going to be doing an investigation into that.
Well, yeah, I don't know if on that specific issue, if that's going to be investigated any further. It's been something that's been batted around for years now, and we still have not gotten to the bottom of exactly what happened there. So on that specific thing, I doubt we'll see, you know, any sort of new information. But on the broader issue of a comprehensive energy policy, there I think you will see some movement. I think Democrats are going to push much more strongly for alternative energy, for renewable energy, wind, solar, and so on. I think you'll see much more federal government involvement there, biomass fuels. So I think that you probably, you know, won't see any, you know, going back to look at that specific meeting. But on energy policy more generally, I think we will see some fairly serious change.
Yeah. I'm reading here that, and maybe you said this, the Democrats want to repeal subsidies for the oil industry.
That's right. That's another area that they want to try to get us moving away from the oil dependence and more into alternative energies.
Yeah. Maybe not some meetings on that 2000 energy meeting, but the Democrats do plan on oversight hearings on various issues, and including the war in Iraq, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So you will see, I think, a much more aggressive role for congressional oversight than we've seen in the last 6 years. That's probably the biggest criticism made by Washington insiders of kind of the role of Congress in our government in the last 6 years, is that they really have not played their constitutional role of checking the president, and that from areas, you know, domestic surveillance, the war in Iraq, to energy policy, a whole range of issues, Congress really has been not being as aggressive as it should be in overseeing the administration. I think you will see much more aggressive oversight in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Pat, in Indianapolis, Indiana, are you listening on the web, or is that just where you're from, Pat?
That's where I'm from. Okay. I'm driving through Wisconsin
okay.
right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
I'm just wondering if the Congress is going to be addressing any of the global climate changes. And the Kyoto Accords, are they dead? And I'll just hang up and listen. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, that's something that's very much on people's minds right now, as we have, you know, 50-degree
right.
weather in January. It really is kind of scary, I think, for Wisconsinites to, you know, see no ice in our lakes at this point in the winter.
Excellent.
It's very much on people's minds right now. Unfortunately, this is not something that is on the sort of the front burners of the agenda for the Democratic Party right now. I think as part of a more comprehensive alternative energy package, however, there will be incentives built into some of these new proposals to reduce our dependence on carbon emission fuels and to increase our use of alternative energy, such as wind and solar, that will reduce the emission of greenhouse gases. So while there isn't any, as far as I know, anything on the Democratic agenda to, say, you know, go back to Kyoto Protocol and to endorse that, I know that at least there's some additional concern and awareness of this issue than has been present in the last several Congresses.
Well, let's go to Jennifer in Ascalon. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just wondering about the impeachment issue and how they could so quickly be saying that that's not even a possibility when their constituents clearly would like to see that happen. And also the comment I'd like to make is that those of us that are old enough to remember Iran-Contra and Watergate and how we felt as if the bottom had dropped out when the culprits involved in that were pardoned and that people weren't really brought to justice, and now here are the same faces back in government again, like a bad dream going all the way back to the Nazi regime.
Yeah, we had to hold you there, Jennifer. I don't mean to cut you short, but we're almost out of time for this hour. Impeachment hearings or that sort of thing, Professor Cannon?
Right. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi has indicated in very strong terms that she will not endorse any impeachment hearings, and she thinks this would be the sort of the wrong direction for the Democratic Party right now. But Jennifer's right that there is a strong contingent within the Democratic Party that would like to see movement in that direction. John Conyers, especially the chair of Judiciary, has indicated an interest in doing this, but Pelosi has sort of squashed that idea. And I think that Pelosi's reasoning here is pretty sound, and that is that if you want to try to have the progress across the board on a broad range of the issues we've been talking about for the last hour, you really would poison the well substantially by moving in the direction of impeachment hearings. That would basically shut down any kind of bipartisan agreement on anything and would just politicize the process in a way that I think most Americans don't want to see. I think most Americans would rather see some positive policies coming out of Congress rather than a return to the, say, Gingrich era of, you know, heightened partisanship when they went after President Clinton with the impeachment of President Clinton. That was sort of the high point of partisanship in Congress, and I think that most people would not want to see a return to that period.
Professor Cannon, thanks a lot for being with us.
You're welcome.
David Cannon, a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing the hour. This is the Ideas Network.